Hi everyone, welcome to another episode of A New Kind of Celebrity. I'm your host Venal and I'm excited to bring you another inspiring and insightful conversation this week. At A New Kind of Celebrity, we define the word celebrity differently. We define it as someone worth celebrating. Our guests are people who are doing incredible work to make this world a better place. Join us as we celebrate these individuals and learn from their experiences, leadership, and wisdom. In this episode, we celebrate Jean Early. Jean Early is a specialist in leadership and organizational development. He works as a strategic advisor to global leaders, entrepreneurs, and nonprofit leaders across Asia, Australia, Europe, and the United States. He works with these leaders to develop transformational leadership, strong organizational cultures, as well as helps them to broaden and deepen their impact. As a partner in Leaders Quest, he has led learning journeys with senior executives from multinationals interested in integrating purpose and performance since 2001. He co-founded Genomic Health, a molecular diagnostic company in Silicon Valley that produced the first genomic-based breast cancer diagnostic test. He also co-founded the first NLP, that is Neuro-Linguistic Programming Institute, in Europe. He has a PhD in leadership and organizational development and has authored numerous articles, books, and ebooks. So thank you for joining this conversation. Very excited to learn more about your journey, and would love actually if we can start with that itself, if you can walk us through a little bit of your personal journey that's led you on this path to coaching individuals and organizations. Anyone who's been coached by you, organization or people, always rave about you. So we'd just love to hear the origins of that.
Oh, well, thank you. I mean, I love the fact that I actually get to reflect on this, you know, because it's not something I do. And so your questions to me are like, oh, okay. Well, let me think about this. I've never actually, until now, thought about what the origins of coaching were. I've just kind of done it, you know, as part of life, right? There are a number of things, and I'll just put them on the table. One of the things is the defining moment in my early life was the death of my father when I was 12. And I'll come back to that. But that was a really dark time, and I needed some way to come out of it. And one of the ways that I found that I did come out of it was that I played basketball. And that was a way to identify with my father because he had played basketball in high school. I loved the game. And there was also something about that identification. But I had a coach in the ninth grade. His name was George Price, who was incredible. And that experience in my ninth grade year was really, I think, a key to this whole thing about what's possible in coaching. And it's like two sides of the same coin. One is the coach, who's George Price, and one is the player, who's me. And then the third one is the team and the dynamic of the team. And I experienced a place of belonging, a place of emotional connection, and a place to grow. He created an environment where this scraggly bunch of boys could actually come together and be a team. He came up with a new strategy for the championship, and we ended up winning the championship. And so it's that combination of, you know, winning is a big piece of it, but also the sense of team and camaraderie and whatever. So that was one piece. And then when I went to university, I didn't know what I was going to do. My dad was a businessman, so I said, I'm going to study economics. So my very first economics test, I made a 55 on out of 100. And I had never made a 55 on any test in any subject anywhere. I'd always made A's and B's. And so I said, you know what? Economics is not for me. So I went into psychology and I said, oh, I love this psychology stuff. And then just another piece of it was my first real job was as a communication skills consultant. And my boss said to me, yeah, I loved it. I love people. I love relationships, but I didn't have a lot of skill. And so my boss said, you know, I think you need to go get some skill. And she was very supportive. And that was great. I joined the transactional analysis training seminar in New York City and had a trainer supervisor. He was incredible. He was so talented, so skilled, very much like my ninth grade basketball coach. He knew how to create a group environment. He knew how to take people through a process. And it was like a reinforcement of, I want this feeling of being a part of a group, growing, having an impact. And he really was central to doing that. And one of the questions that you asked was, you know, where does this kind of deep belief in people come from?
Yep.
And I think that the impact that I have in the work I do is directly related to that.
Hmm.
And once I got into the field, I realized that presence was the key. And that skill was great. It really was presence and how you showed up. You know, for me, it was a long journey. It was 35 years from the time my father died until the time I actually got out of that black hole, the emotional black hole. I mean, I was working my way out. It was very, very challenging emotionally. It was a time in university. I graduated. I wanted to go into a PhD, and I did not have the bandwidth. I didn't have the emotional stability. I wasn't formal, but I wouldn't be surprised if I weren't clinically depressed. It had overtaken me. And so I was still working my way out of this black hole. And I think you choose a profession that will grow you, that will address the wounds, the hurts, the dysfunction that you've grown up with. And so to go into communication field, interpersonal communication, was really both a personal thing about I want to be healed and also a family structure thing of I want the family system in my everyday life as an adult where I belong and others belong and there's a sense of camaraderie, the sense of love and care, all that goes with that. So it's like, how do you do that? Because, you know, when I was young, I felt externally fragmented. You know, it's like I didn't feel like people really knew me for who I was. And I longed to be known for who I was because I internally felt like I did. And so part of my personal journey has been a journey to wholeness, which is really a return to the essence of who I am. That returning home is a concept for me because home is where the heart is, right? And that starts on the inside. That's not on the outside. You know, and so many people look to find it externally and they're always disappointed because you cannot find it externally. You can only find it by, you know, finding it within yourself. So, you know, I really chose a career to bring order and coherence and peace to myself. And one of the things about that is that I have learned that what I have inside of me, I can give to others. So when I am internally ordered and coherent and at peace, the people around me get that. They get it. And I want them to get it because I want to live with them. It's like me and you. I love being with you. Why? Because there's such a resonance of life and love and care. And, you know, you have such a passion for life. And so being with you, I get to resonate at that frequency. And so that's the way I want to live my life. I want to, one, I want to find people like that. But other, I want to find people who have the longing for it, but haven't found the roadmap to it.
Right.
And I want to give them the roadmap. Because once I give them the roadmap, they find they can enter into that space. And then I get to be with them in that space. So that's been really significant. And then you asked me this question, what might be some incidents in your early days that shaped you or formed you? And the one that came to mind was even today I feel it. I was in this training group with my trainer supervisor in transactional analysis. And part of the deal was that when you got far enough along, you had to present a model to the training group. And it's like, I came up against that wall of, okay, he said, okay, when do you want to do it? And we set a date. And we met every month. We met one weekend a month. And we set a date. And that weekend came, and it was a Saturday. And he said, okay, you're presenting tomorrow. And I went, no, I think I won't do it. He said, no, you're presenting tomorrow. I said, no, I'm not ready. No, you're presenting tomorrow. As however ready you are, you're going to be up there, up on stage. Ah! It's like, Come on, no. He was so congruent. And there was no way out for me. So I went home. I stayed up all night. I was a pool of sweat. I was totally anxious, agitated, knowing I had to do it. And also had this thing from growing up where I needed to be perfect. And so, you know, put those two together and you go, man, the anxiety level just off the charts. And so, you know, I designed a presentation. I went in fear and trembling. And I knocked it, and we say in the U.S., I knocked the ball out of the park. It was spectacular. I was amazed at myself. I said, what just happened? I mean, this was, how did that happen? How did I didn't know. I just did it, but I didn't know. I mean, that really was the beginning, because that opened the door. My trainer also worked in Europe, and I had, when I was in university, I had gone to Europe. I decided I wanted to live and work in Europe. And so he said, listen, you know, I'll invite you to this conference that I've been invited to, and you can present this model in that conference. And it was like, I wasn't scared to do that. I said, great, I want to go to Europe. I didn't think about having to present. I just thought about going to Europe. And so it turns out I had 150 people in that audience. And I did it again. I knocked the ball out of the park. I got a standing ovation.
Wow.
I was like, wow. There were three people in that presentation who were organizers in Copenhagen and in Belgium and in England. And they invited me to come and teach and train and work with them. So that was my opening invitation to come into Europe. And they asked me to do things that I didn't know how to do. And so I had to learn how to do them to teach them, right? And I mean, I would just say in terms of learning, that's, you know, teach what you need to learn, because I wanted people to have a good experience. And so I took that very seriously. But it meant that I had to bring that order and structure to myself in order to give it to them about the teaching training and about this whole point of creating experience for the listener, learner, coachee, organization. I mean, it set a pattern, you know, that I'm responsible for the experience I create.
Right.
And that takes some work. One of the things I used to say was, I just took a deep dive into Europe. I did not know what I was doing, but I had a vision that compelled me to engage this anxiety producing journey. You know, I was asked to do things that I had never done before, expected to be able to do things I didn't know that I could do. And so I had to do them. I mean, it was like I had to do them.
Right.
And one of the learnings from that was that I learned that I actually had it within me to do. And so in my work, that's what I see in others. I know, because of my own experience, I know that other people have capacity within themselves to be who they are, to do what they never thought they could do because of who they are. And that's a very, very powerful place to hold space for people, because when they break through, like I broke through in going to Europe, when they break through, they realize, oh, their capacity is so much greater than they've allowed. And so that self-limiting beliefs, you know, they spontaneously get addressed, and also we can address them directly in the process.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned a lot of different things, some technical as well, right? And coaching is relatively new as a concept to many people. Let's say my parents' generation or many people who still work with. It's not something that you automatically think that you need or will benefit you, or you don't understand what it is, right? So just for the benefit of people who aren't as familiar, if you can, and you mentioned something called transactional analysis also. I also don't know what that is. So it'll be great if you can just talk about what is the work that you do in maybe a way that everyone understands, even if they've not experienced coaching.
Yeah, that's a great question, because I'm just presupposing people know, right? And you're bringing me back on track. That's really, really great. So coaching, the way I do it anyway, because there are different forms of coaching, but the way I do it is basically it's a conversation. You can recognize you have a good close friend. And, you know, I'll give you an example. Our 19-year-old grandson is taking a gap year in Denmark, and he's become fluent in Danish, and he's going to get his adult Danish passport as a result, which is why he's there. It's a gap year. And he was saying, I really recognize that I have been faced with adult situations, and I am able to navigate adult situations. And I said, what's an example? And he said, well, I have two friends, and the three of us really were close, are close. And suddenly they decided that they were going to become a couple. They were going to become, you know, a pair. And he said, that totally changed our relationship. I had to navigate that. And so in the process of doing that, he kind of grew, right? So what happened was that he was in a comfortable situation. That situation changed. He had to process, how do I relate to this couple now as opposed to two individual friends? And his mindset changed, and he was not resistant to that. But rather, he said, okay, you know, it's changed. What I had is not what it is now. So this is the way I'll relate to him. And so that then became foundational for the next thing, which is some other friends were a couple, and the guy decided, okay, I want to switch girlfriends. And so he took up with another girl and left. When he left, was still attached to him. And so there was this kind of dynamic. And, you know, our grandson was saying that he wasn't as close to them, but he had a friend. And this friend counseled the guy who had made the shift and said, listen, you need to tone it down. Don't go putting this in the face of the girl you left, because she still likes you. Don't make it more painful for her. Okay, you shifted, but, you know, that was a form of coaching. We do that in our everyday life by working with ourselves, like our son, our grandson Lucas did, or working with regard to another person who's in a circumstance that they don't have a good roadmap out of. And so we all have these life situations where we get stuck, you know, and sometimes that's professional, sometimes it's personal, sometimes interpersonal, sometimes it's family. And so the way I do it is that coaching is having a conversation with somebody, listening to them. And basically that can take, typically in my sessions, I'll go 2 hours. And the first hour, I'll simply be listening for them to tell their story. What's happening? What's important to you right now? You know, is it a relationship? Is it a concern about finances? Is it a job? Is it, what are you going to do for a vacation? I mean, it doesn't matter. It's like, it's everyday life. And I make no separation between personal and professional. It's like, because I look at patterns, you know, and if you have a pattern in your personal life, you're going to have a pattern in your professional life, right?
Right.
And I also, another, if you will, learning is that I treat the external world as a mirror. When I'm coaching somebody, they're saying, oh, they're talking about, for example, they could be talking about their parents, conflict with their parents. Or they could be talking about a coworker, conflict with that, talk about a partner or a spouse and conflict, often conflict, or just being stuck and not knowing what to do. And so you ask them, you know, what are you going to do? And say, I don't know. Right. And you've had this experience, you know, you go, I don't know. Right. And what do I say? I say, you do know. And then I hold the space. You know, hey, what do you mean? What do you mean? I don't know. You do know. It's embodied knowing. It's in your body. It's not in your conscious mind. So let's find the answer. And so I hold the space, which means I am just totally presupposing that you have that answer and that I'll help you get it. And then guess what? People find the answer and they're totally surprised because they start with, I don't know. And they end up with, you know what? I did know. And it's just like me on that first time I had to present in transactional analysis. I didn't know I could do it.
Right.
I had it in me, but I didn't know I could do it. And my supervisor believed in me that I could do it and would not let me escape. And so that's part of what I do in coaching. I don't let people escape, right? Because I know you're nodding like, oh, does that sound familiar?
Right. Yeah. No, that's really interesting. And I think you've said two things that are just in my head right now. One is the fact that you mentioned that some of these are just conversations we have either with ourselves, like you mentioned in an example, or with friends. And given that all of us have these sort of interactions, what would make all of us more effective in having these interactions? If you can just maybe share two things or three things that right. all of us could just do better while having conversations with ourselves and another. And then the other one I'll ask you later.
Okay, two answers to that. One is to develop some skills around mindset, or what I call internal representations. So the thing is, you have an experience and you filter that through your own mindset or your set of internal representations of that experience. You make sense of it for yourself. And that's the point about, you know, five people can experience the same thing and they have five different representations of what it is, you know, because their mindset's a filter. And so they see things, they feel things from different angles. And not to say that one is true and the other is not, but to say that's a perception, right? Mm. So developing skill in that area is really important. And I can talk about it later, but just to say to people, one place to do that is through what's called neuro-linguistic programming, which I discovered a bit later in my journey. And it focuses on the structure of subjective experience. And that just means, what is the filter you use to make sense of the world? Okay. So one thing is learn some of those things. Okay. But practically, if you're just listening and you want to say, I want to go and do something today, I don't want to sign up for a training program or something like that. Great. So there are a couple things that I would say. One is the process of identification. Naturally, in order to make sense out of our communication, there's a neurological process using what's called mirror neurons in our brain. And effectively, what they do is they mimic the nonverbals as well as the verbals in the communication. So that in order to understand what your meaning is for me, I have to process that neurologically. And they've actually discovered by research mirror neurons, which are the neurological foundation for that matching. Okay. That's how we understand one another. I realized that I could make that conscious. So in other words, take a naturally occurring process and make it into a tool or process. And so the way I do that, for example, and this is what a person could do, you know, think of someone that you really admire and identify three characteristics of that person. You know, so for example, I really admire you. And one of the things I admire about you is your entrepreneurial go-get-it. I mean, the podcast is an example of that, right? So, and other people who know you might not be entrepreneurial. And so one of the characteristics in you is your entrepreneurialism. Another characteristic of you is your openness. So, you know, we've had lots of good conversations and interactions, and you have been open with yourself as well as with me, but with yourself more importantly. For example, when you got triggered and get angry and, you know, you go, you know, you kind of get upset and go, but you didn't stay stuck there. You know, your openness allowed you to make sense out of that, understand the source of it, and get beyond it. You know, that's a really, I think it's a precious gift. The third characteristic I say for you is, you have a passion for, I would say, the marginalized. You have a passion for those people who don't have all of the resources, who don't have all the opportunities, and you're just committed. You know, so that passion and that commitment, it just oozes out of your pores, right? It's just one of those beautiful things about you. So those are three characteristics of you, you know, as I see in my experience with you. And anybody can do that with any other person. You do it, for example, the first person I did with was Nelson Mandela. So it's not even somebody I know, just somebody I read about.
Right.
But there's a very simple question. How is what I see in you true of me? That's the identification question. How is what I see in you true of me? And back to what I said before is like, people will say, oh, I don't know. Or no, I'm not entrepreneurial, right? And I'm going, sorry, you are. How is it true that you are? You may not be entrepreneurial the way Vanille is, but you are entrepreneurial. How are you? Let's find that. And if I'm working with them, I'll hold the space for it. If they are listening to this podcast and they're going to do it, then they have to hold that space for themselves. They have to believe that they can find this. They cannot accept, I don't know, or I don't want to go there. So that kind of thing, you have to say yes. And saying yes is really important. And so when you do this, okay, how is this true of me that I am entrepreneurial? So then what you do is you find a memory that is entrepreneurial in nature. And the slightly more advanced thing is entrepreneurial, open, passionate, and committed.
Right.
Right. So find a memory that has those three parts to it. Right. So, you know, if I were to do that, I would say one of the memories I have is that I co-founded the first NLP training institute in Europe. Okay. I was entrepreneurial because I said, I want to go to Europe. I'm going to take initiative. I'm going to be proactive. So that's characteristic of that memory. My openness, I realized that I couldn't do it by myself, right? So I was open to input from others. And so I had a group, there were two others that I was working with. And then there's another group of people who wanted to do the same thing. So instead of being territorial, I was open enough, we were open enough to say, let's combine our forces and we'll do it together.
Right.
So these two groups came together to do that. So that's the openness part. Passion and commitment. I mean, I am still passionate and commitment about NLP. I love this stuff because I love structure and NLP is all about structure. And so, okay. So that passion was able to kind of help be the engine to drive that institute for a number of years. And it became the seedbed for a number of other people who were trained and went out and now NLP trainers and et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
And from there came the Association of NLP, and you know, which is now a quite vibrant association of people who've been trained in NLP. And this was the very first effort, right? So that's the entrepreneurial, the open, the passion, commitment. I found that memory in me. So that means you and I share something very deep. You know, it's not that you're Indian and I'm American,
right?
It's that we actually, at the structure level, we share entrepreneurial, open, passionate, and committed, right? And the fact that as soon as you and I share something like that, I have no place to judge you. I can't point my finger at you and blame you. There is no separation here. And we live in a world that is so polarized.
Yeah.
So many groups fighting each other and blaming and charging each other. And when you do this, there is no place for that.
Right.
Well, so what is it? The effect of it is it creates peace. The effect of it is it creates harmony. It creates reconciliation. It says that even those people that are doing things that I disagree with, and maybe I violently disagree with them, the very thing they're doing, I have inside of me. And if I'll find it, I can't be harsh. I can't be judgmental. I can find a way to work with them. I can find a way to negotiate a win-win for the greater good, right? Well, think about that. I mean, if that's all your listeners took from this, it is the most transformational process that I know of. I live that process every day. You know, I'll do it with nature as well. I look at this incredible tree outside my window and go, how am I one with that tree? That tree has just flourished. The leaves have just come out. They are brilliant, kind of light green. You know, what is that? I see that as beauty. Okay. How is it true of me that I am beauty? And I have to find a memory that goes, I'm beautiful. And that's because of nature. And that's the point about external mirror. The world is an external mirror to my internal structure, to my internal self. And there is no place for me to say, I don't know. I do know, but I have to find it.
Right. I remember we've had some discussions over email back and forth about this concept, especially I know I've struggled a lot with identifying when it comes to the positive things. It's even if I hadn't thought of it earlier, it's easy for me to try and think of an example. But when I'm looking at someone and saying really upset with them for what they're doing, it's so much harder to do this process or to even acknowledge that it's important to do the process. And I know through our discussions, one thing, at least intellectually, I've gained till now is that till I'm not able to do that process, I'm not going to be able to resolve or move forward from that situation. But I know it's been incredibly hard at different moments that, like you mentioned, I've been angry and written to you about what I'm angry about. It's been quite challenging to actually go through this process.
Right. But you have to make the decision, right? And that's why it is difficult, because then what you have to do is you have to look at the dark side of yourself, which is, you know, Carl Jung called it the shadow self. You have to look at that. Well, to be fully who you're meant to be, you have to deal with your shadow. And so making the decision to identify with that which you want to go away from, that's a very courageous decision. Hmm. It takes courage to do that. It takes commitment to do that. And think about this. I love this. You are entrepreneurial, open, passionate, committed. Apply that resource in you to your identification with people that you are opposed to or disagree with.
Mm. Right.
That's how you bring the integration. Because you have the resource to do it. You have the energy. The engine is there. All you gotta do is turn it on.
Right.
And that's true for all of us. I mean, you know, we all have difficult circumstances where we don't want to. You know, we want them to be the bad guy.
Yeah, that was really useful. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, you're welcome. You're welcome. Yeah.
I think, Gene, also, just from the work I know that you've done, it ranges so much. I know we met at Leaders Quest, at a quest that was held in Kenya. And through that, I know you work with so many different organizations, both some grassroots, literally across the globe, or big corporate companies as well. So I'd love to hear more about like what motivated you or what motivates you even today to work with that range of spectrum. Like, I've not known you to say no. If someone reaches out, and I know I've done that a lot, you know, just something's bothering me and I just ask if I can write you an email and we talk about it. And I know of many other instances as well. So I know time is limited in general for everyone. And yet you always say yes to helping people out. So would love if you can just share more about both the work that you do with people and how do you manage to always say yes?
So two things. One is, I think you've identified a learning in my journey, which is saying yes. And saying yes is not a trivial thing to do because it starts by saying yes to myself. And I had to learn that because I grew up and for many years felt like that my family said no to me at a deep level, not at a surface level. I mean, they loved me and they provided for me and they supported me, and but they didn't know me. And I took that as a no. And so I had to come to the place where I stopped saying no to myself because I internalized it. I had to stop saying no to myself. When I started saying yes to myself, I then started saying yes to others at this level you're talking about now. And that really happened first in the external way. It happened in relationship to Benedicta, my wife, where she said, "You're saying no to me." And I said, "What are you saying? I'm not saying no. Look at my behavior. My behavior, no, you're saying no." And what she was picking up was the internal no to myself, which manifested in a resistance to her. It wasn't an overt no. It was a resistance. And I so appreciate that input from her because it took me a while to actually understand what she was saying, but then to make the change. And I made the change and I live in yes. And if I may disagree with someone, I don't stop there. I go, yes, and. So, you know, and I'm not perfect by any means, but I find what I can say yes to, and then I transition it to expand what my yes is, and hopefully to invite the other person into the yes. Okay, so that's the yes piece that you were talking about. Will you ask the question again, because I got lost in yes?
Yes, no problem. Also, just would love to hear more about the work you do with people across the globe, so many different organizations in so many different countries. Right. Both NGOs, corporates, so just what made you make those choices also of working with this range?
Okay, so I work with a group called Partnership for Green Growth, which is a sustainability-oriented group that works on public-private partnerships with emerging economies and national businesses within that economy. Yeah, Indonesia and Korea and Kenya, Ethiopia, Vietnam, places like that, Colombia. So that's one. I'm working in South Africa with two foundations that one of which is after school education, one of which is leadership development. And we have brought together a group of very entrepreneurial oriented business people, educators, nonprofit leaders who have a vision for impacting South Africa. And so we're about that. Hmm. Working with a community group in Australia who want to impact the region of Tamworth, which is an area between Sydney and Brisbane. It's a very dynamic town and region, and they've kind of done version 1.0. Now they want to do version 2.0. So we're actually getting ready to do that at the end of May. We're gathering cross-section of about 40 community leaders for the purpose of building, you know, the next level of intervention at that community level. I'm working with Leaders Quest. You mentioned Leaders Quest is a social enterprise. And historically, we have taken senior business leaders around the world to on learning journeys to have experiential knowledge and then reflection about who they can be in the world and the kind of impact they can bring to the world. And then I also work with a group of professional peers, which we call the Elevation Collective, mostly Europe and America. We are just brainstorming, you know, how do we impact the world range. I'm working with, you know, more mundane types of things, which are just corporates, you know, doing their thing. And that's all about building teams and working with the CEOs, one of which is a merger and acquisition. So that's going to be very interesting because that's going to be culture formation of two entities. Yeah, I'm also working with a company that's a Japanese company that is quite a different culture. So that's really fascinating. So that's kind of the range of people I'm working with. Then your question was why?
Yeah.
Am I doing it?
Yeah. Why the range? Because sometimes when people, they specialize over time, you know, and say, okay, I'm coaching, let's say, corporates, or even specifically within that only CXO, let's say, in corporates. So why the range of this huge, diverse issues, types of organizations, types of people?
That's a very good question. You can tell I was diverting from it to try and get an answer to it.
You can take time and think also.
Well, one thing that comes to mind is that I began my work at an individual level. I expanded that to working with teams. Another aspect of my history is that I co-founded a company called Genomic Health in Silicon Valley, which actually created the first breast cancer diagnostic test for diagnosing breast cancer and the risk of recurrence of breast cancer. And we went public and all that. So that was moving into whole organizations and being responsible for whole organizations. And then other things emerged out of that where my consulting work became at the organizational level. So this is an evolution of my work. What I'm doing now is system work. So all of these projects are systems. Right. All of these people are, these are amazing, amazing, amazing leaders. I mean, you know, it is such a privilege to even just be in the room with these people. I mean, one of my gifts is really, some people call it strategic advising, but it's how I think is one of my gifts. And so I am able to bring vision to visionaries. So, you know, this whole process of people that I work with are visionaries, but they get so caught up in their vision that they don't see what's possible. And so because I'm outside of that, I see them, I see them for who they are and what's possible. And I hold the space for them to go to that next level of vision. And they're almost always surprised because it's just like me, back to that first story about me having to teach. You know, I didn't know I had it in me. My trainer, I mean, I just have to give him so much credit. My trainer wouldn't let me escape, right? I don't let the people I work with escape who they are. It's not about me, it's about them.
Right.
It's their capacity. You can do this. The people that I work with, because they are visionaries, because they bring that entrepreneurial drive, they often experience themselves as being alone. And so being able to be someone who sees them for who they are, who is trustworthy, and because of that actually empowers them to trust themselves. So why do I do it? I do it because it's big and broad and global. I do it because it's incredibly enriching in my life to be able to participate with these people. I do it because I see the benefit that they bring and that I bring to them, but that they bring to the world. I mean, every person I work with is bringing greater benefit to the world. Another group that I have worked with and have relationship with in India is Daniel Lobo and Because You. That has been so exciting to see him raise up this whole mental health for all of India and beyond. I mean, just exciting work.
Absolutely.
So, I don't know. Does that answer the question or not?
Yes, that does. That does. And when you think about all of this work and the multiple, like you mentioned, breakthroughs that would have happened in so many conversations, when you think about impact that you've had, like what stands out to you?
So let me tell you a story as an illustration. I think the takeaway I have from it is that I and we don't know the full extent of who we are or the impact we have in the world. Hmm. When I was in this early training program in transactional analysis, part of what I had to do is part of the program was to have therapy groups. I didn't want to be a therapist, but I wanted the training. And so I said, okay, I have therapy groups. This was over 40 years ago. I charged $4 a session per person. I mean, and if you look today, therapy sessions today, charge $100 a session or $150 a session in the US. It just kind of gives a contrast to where I was, but my lack of skill, but also where the world has gone. And I had a group. It was very much like the ninth grade basketball team. I was doing that group to create an environment where we loved one another. And I was very limited in my skill. And so I did what I could do. I showed up in the way I could show up. There was a young woman in that group who came from a highly dysfunctional family, who was very stressed. And, the one thing about her was she came every week to the group. And she was in that group for 2 years. So one thing I'll say is today in my sessions, it's almost every session people get a breakthrough. And oftentimes it's transformational in terms of who they see themselves as being and how they work. Back then, I didn't see any of that. Hmm. All I did was the best I could. Fast forward 35 years, 40 years, that's probably 35 years. My daughter-in-law is a PhD in marriage and family counseling, a professor. She was teaching a seminar in Philadelphia, and a woman came up to her and said, "Your last name is Early. Do you happen to know somebody named Gene Early?" And Anne Marie, my daughter-in-law, said, "Yeah, I do. He's my father-in-law. I happen to know him." And this woman said, "Well, I just want you to know that he saved my life." And then she told the story that she was the one in this group. And that 2 years, without any immediate change, it stabilized her enough to get her through a suicidal period of her life, which we never actually talked about suicide. Hmm. But the fact that she was loved by that group and by me in that group allowed her to keep progressing and to see that there was a roadmap, there was a path out. And it was just such a profound experience for Anne-Marie to tell me that story and go, I had no idea that I'd had that impact. If I think back to how I thought about myself as a 26-year-old doing stuff I didn't know how to do and realized I saved somebody's life, and it wasn't only me and, it wasn't my intervention, but that I created the space in which that happened. Another just related example is the founder of these two foundations in South Africa. I've known her for over 30 years. And one of the reasons that we're working together now is that many years ago, she was in one of my workshops and we were doing a feedback session. And she just asked me, and this is part of the work I do in large groups. She said, "Do you have any feedback for me?" I had observed her and recognized that she was an extrovert and she liked to talk and et cetera. And she had good things to say. But I just said one word and I just said, "Listen, I was responding at the pattern level. I wasn't responding at the behavior level." Fast forward 30 years and she tells me, and a group, we in this group in South Africa that we're working with, she tells the story and she said, "That saved my life." Because what she did was she stopped and listened to her body and went to the doctor. And as a result, her physical health was saved. But on the point of you don't know the impact you have by showing up as who you are, right? I just was showing up as who I was. I was just responding. I didn't have an agenda with her.
Right.
The other side of that is her openness to hear. It's like your openness to hear. That openness to hear is so important because then she could act on it, right? And not be defended and not resist, you know, oh no, I know better. So that's another story about that. I did not believe I was a master at that time.
Right.
I wanted to be a master. But what I would say is I'd really encourage people to, first of all, find out who is your essential self, not your constructed self, your essential self, right? And that essential self has no negative in it. There is no in it. It's only yes. There is no judgment in it. There's only forgiveness. There is only yes in your essential self. Okay. That's hard for people to come to. And it's one of the reasons I work with people is because I know it. And so I can hold the space for them to know it.
Right.
But any listener can go there. There's no limitation on that. But you have to say yes to it. So find your essential self and understand the distinction between that essential self and your constructed self. Your constructed self is that part of you that you have made decisions about who you are, who other people are, who the world is. It's all self-limiting, right? There are no limits in your essential self, right? There are physical limits, obviously. You know, it's difficult for us to fly without a plane, right? And from that essential self, identify what you are passionate about, what you get joy from in terms of the work you do, those memories that where you really just experience joy. You know, the structure of that memory contains an expression of your essential self. Pay attention to it. You know, find more examples of it. Find out what the pattern is. Okay. Once you've done that, then go, how do I express that? How do I express that in my professional life? How do I express that in my family life? How do I express that with my friends? There is a core pattern that is calling you to mastery, right? And that is what people say, it's a vocation, right? It's how you express that in the world. The work I do is an expression of my mastery. So I spent many years before I believed and would allow myself to believe that I was a master of NLP. And this is not a certification level. This is an experiential level.
Right.
And it's because I love structure, and NLP is about the study of the structure of subjective experience. I love that. You know, if you love it, you spend time with it. You know, if you think about your partner, your spouse, you love them. You want to be with them. You want to spend time with them. And I would say that's core to my work, which is I really choose to do things I love. And that comes across. People who work with me know that I love them. You talk about, you know, how can you be so clear in seeing people and believing in people? It's because I love them and they know it. And that's not a question. And even though oftentimes people will struggle with, well, can I really accept that Gene loves me? Because so often they've never had that experience. And so they're like, how do you make sense of it? But my point is, when you master that core pattern of your life, and it can take 40 years to master it. I mean, it took me 35 years, I'd say, to come to a place where I owned it. Then it just kind of introduces you into the flow of life. And I would say that it doesn't have to take that long for other people. Right. It's taken me that long because I didn't have someone who could help me really get there. Many people have helped me on my way, but to actually get here, I had to do the work. And that's true for all of us. We have to do the work. Well, do the work now. And do the work now. Don't take 35 years. Take 2 years or 5 years.
Right. Thank you for sharing that. I think both the stories and also my experience and the experience of many people who I know have interacted with you. I think one of the reasons also that I definitely wanted you on this podcast was just when people talk about you, you can see the joy in their, like, you know, their eyes light up, their face, and immediately, like, something common people share is, like, within few seconds, immediately you get to something that's important to the person, whether they've said it or not. And I think it's just incredible, the ability to connect in that way with so many people. And like you mentioned, that you genuinely love people, and that's what comes through. It'll take me some time also to just understand how do you do that. And I think it goes back to maybe what you spoke about, the identification, or maybe it's something else. But I think it's an absolutely incredible quality that definitely does come through.
Yeah, I mean, I am quite spiritual, and it's a spiritual quality. I mean, you don't do this out of your mind. You do this out of your spirit, right?
Right.
And the thing is that, you know, that too has been a journey for me, is the resistance to wanting to acknowledge it, you know, that I'm a spiritual being and all that goes with that. And many people have that resistance, you know, because the world can be very distracting. You know, you've got so many things putting demands on yourself, and learning how to just be quiet enough to get in touch with what I'm calling your essential self, which is really, you know, who you are in the spirit. That's a very challenging, you know, it's very challenging, but it's so rewarding. And you're talking about the joy. I mean, one of the things for me personally has been spontaneous joy. So I'll just be, you know, sitting, doing something, you know, I go for a walk every day, particularly in COVID. I never did before, but in COVID, I started taking a walk every day just because I had to get out. But I'll be walking along, not thinking about anything particularly. And all of a sudden, I just had this burst of joy, you know, and it's like, that was never the case, you know, as a younger person. That was just never the case. I had spontaneous joy. And it is a result, I think, of, you know, the internal healing process I've been through and that I do every day. I do every day, which just in terms of things that people can do that I've done that I do today that they may want to do, you know, you have tools. One of the great benefits of this career that I have and the commitments I have has been that I've gained access to many, many tools and processes for inner growth. And one of them that I find very valuable is called emotional freedom technique. It's called tapping. And, you know, a great resource for that is a website called thetappingsolution.com. It's Nick Ortner and Jessica Ortner. But basically what it is the combination of accessing emotional resilience and the physiological process of energy work. So the tapping is you're actually tapping on acupressure points as you are processing internal stuff. So you start with whatever you represent in your mind as the problem, how you're stuck. You start tapping and you work your way through the tapping into the resolution. So, you know, 8 to 10 minutes, you can be totally different state. I think about it, for me, it's like meditation on steroids. It is it is a great way to enter into meditation. You know, tap first to kind of get myself grounded and settled and in presence. And then meditation takes off, right? But Benedicta and I do it every morning, and it just sets the day. You know, and everybody has their morning rituals.
Right.
But it's one for us that we have found incredibly powerful.
Right. And Jean, finally, I know we're getting close to time as well. I'd love if you can share. You've shared a lot of pieces of advice and nuggets and tools that people can use through the conversation. But as you just think about learnings you've had or few points of advice you'd like to share with anyone listening to close out this episode, what would those be?
I mean, if you go to, you know me, I'm all about structure. And, you know, that's why I got involved in NLP. I'm all about structure because it's all about how do you go to the core, right? You know, what is the core pattern? And when you get to the core pattern, if you change some aspect of the core pattern, you change the whole expression of that pattern, right? And that's true at individual level. So, for example, if I believe I'm not enough, right? That's part of a core pattern. And if I change that to, oh, that's not true. You know, I'm more than enough. You change that one part of your internal world. The way you show up in the external world changes, right? Because your filters change. And when your filters change, your behavioral responses change. Your behavioral responses change. People respond differently to you, right? That's all about core patterns, right? So just to say, you know, in terms of things I've learned, if I go to my core pattern, it is that God is good and he is for me, and that I have a personal relationship with God and God communicates to me. And I know people will go, hey, what are you talking about? But it's true. God communicates. And, you know, it's taken me a while, but I've got to a place where he communicates on a regular basis with me. It's part of the unfolding revelation of his love and therefore the love in me and therefore what I can give to others. And so that has changed me radically. From when I was a young man and when I was in this deep, dark hole of depression over my father's death and the sense of who am I in the world and what can I be? And anyway, all that has transformed. And that's great. It's because of that relationship. So that's one thing. Second thing I would say is I agree with Freud, not on a lot of things, but on this thing I agree, which was that love and work are the cornerstones of our humanity. So when I was going to university, I had a scholarship interview and the committee asked me, what are the two most important things as you think about the future of your life? I did not know Freud. I didn't know anything. But I said to them, I said, the person I marry and the work I do. And that has just stayed with me, that's exactly what Freud was saying, right? And I have been successful in both. And I'm just so grateful to have had that experience of growing into the fullness of that statement. I didn't know what I was talking about when I said it, but it just popped out of me. And I really love it. Another thing I've learned is that I define wisdom as truth in action. So I want to be wise. You know, what does it take to be wise? What it takes to be wise is to get to that core. And the core is truth. And the thing about people I work with, everyone I work with, when you talk about truth in this way, they say yes. Even though they may say, oh, everybody has their own truth, and da, 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 and they go, no. When you get to their truth, the deeper thing, not their beliefs, but their truth, which is their essential self, there's no disagreement. And so I go, okay, find that truth and then act on it. And that is wisdom. And we can grow in wisdom. And how do we do that? We grow in wisdom by pursuing truth. And so I'm really big on people pursuing truth. You pursue truth, you'll find it. Mm. You know, and be relentless and ruthless about pursuing truth. You know, because it establishes you and enables you to stand for what's right, what has integrity, what is good for the whole, you know, what blesses the community you're part of, the world you live in. That wisdom is critical to our day and age. And everyone listening has access to it if they will pursue truth and then act on it. Mm-hmm. Another learning is that humility is the willingness to be known for who you are. And this gets back to this piece about your openness. You know, I experience you as incredibly humble. And that's because you're not defending who you thought you were. You know, you thought you were angry, or you thought you were upset at someone, and you didn't defend that. You've said, no, I there's something better. And that better is who you are. And so your humility is saying, I'm willing to be known for, first of all, being angry and not owning that as my essential self, and being able to release that anger as I grow into the fullness of who I am. That is humility. And it's not just about being lowly. It's about saying, this is who I am, standing up for who you are. Your passion with regard to the rights of people, that's an expression of humility, because it is your essential self saying, yes, this is who I am. And I love that. I love that about you. I'm just so grateful to be in your life and to be anyway, I could go on about that.
Thank you so much. I'm so grateful for having met you and all our interactions.
Yeah. Another thing I would say is that we can remove fear and doubt and unbelief. And that is what's required to find your essential self. Because fear, doubt, and unbelief, they are obstacles to living from your essential self. You know, I would say just one recommendation, you know, this is not so much a learning as it is a recommendation. There is an exercise which I call best self exercise. I learned it from Robert Quinn, who wrote a book called Building the Bridge as You Walk on It. It's the best leadership book I've ever read. But he has this idea in there that somebody else offered him, and I've taken and adapted it. And it is what I call best self exercise. And that is invite 5, 10, 15. I used my first time I did, I asked 35 people who you trust. Will you share with me an example that you've experienced with me of when I was in my best self? I was behaving in my best self. And will you tell me why that impacted you? What is it about that experience with me that you've observed that's impacted me? Will you give me that feedback? And people who love and trust you, they'll give you that. And every time I invite people to do this exercise, they get blown away. Because what happens is their essential self gets revealed. So best self is the behavioral expression of your essential self. There are no words. You can only describe your essential self. It's not the words. It's the being, right? But how do you discern it? You observe best self behavior, right? And what you're doing is you're asking people for feedback on your best self behavior. And they give you that feedback. And then the next step is ask the identification question. How is this true about me, what they're saying? So they're giving you the standard to judge yourself on, in a positive sense of judge. You ask the question, how is it true about me? And you find other examples where the structure of that behavior has been manifest. And then the next step beyond that is you make it an identity. This is who I am. Right. So that's best self.
Lovely. Is there anything else? I know we've spoken about so many different things and topics. Is there anything else you'd like to share before we close?
I'd love for people to go to my LinkedIn and read the articles I have on LinkedIn. That would be great. And again, feedback. Would love feedback. You're great at that. You give great feedback. And just really invite people to correspond. Maybe even feedback from this podcast. That would be great. Oh, that'd be wonderful.
Yeah, sure.
It creates that energetic loop. So that's another thing I would say is that I really believe that energetic presence is the most transformational. I mean, skill and capacity and all that. You learn, you have experience, you reflect on it, you grow because of it. You have a growth mindset. That is incredibly powerful. And to begin paying attention to it. So I just as a recommendation there is an organization called HeartMath, which has actually done the science of measuring energetic presence. And so, for example, they've measured the energetic space that your heart creates. And when your heart opens, it can create an energetic presence as far as 15 feet away that's been measured.
Wow.
And who knows how far it could go, because there is no time and space in that dimension, in the energetic dimension. There's no time and space. I mean, there's a lot of research on that. And so feedback is a form of that. That's a tangible expression of energetic presence.
Thank you so much, Gene.
Thank you so much for this opportunity of being with you and reflecting. Yeah.
Thank you for all your lovely learnings and wisdom.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. If you liked this episode, do subscribe to the podcast and follow us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, or LinkedIn. We'd love to hear your suggestions, reactions, or even guest nominations. You can DM us on Instagram. Our handle is @anewkindofcelebrity. Or email us @anewkindofcelebrity@gmail.com. We look forward to meeting you soon. Till then, good luck and take care.